Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Deeper Waters podcast. Sorry we weren't able to be here last week. We had some difficulties come up and such. Nothing I could have done anything about, unfortunately. But our guest was kind enough to say, yeah, I can come back next week and talk about the topic instead. My guest is Dr. Frieda Busch. Let me tell you a little bit about her. And this is coming from her own website here, where she became a certified nurse midwife in 1970, worked at Harlem Hospital. In 1974, Dr. Busch became the director of nurse midwifery programs at the University of Mississippi. 83, she received her medical degree from the University of Mississippi Medical School. 87, completed a residency in obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Tennessee Medical Center, Memphis. She's currently a board member of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health and formerly served as a presidential appointee to the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV/AIDS from 2006 to 2009. Media past chair of the Board of Directors of the Federation of State Medical Boards of the United States 2011-12. Served on the Mississippi State Board of Medical Licensure for 12 years. And she's a past president of the Central Mississippi Medical Society. I'm tongue-tied today. In 2006, she received a Community Service Award from the Mississippi State Medical Association, and she's co-author of a book, Hooked, New Science on How Casual Sex is Affecting Our Children. And in fact, if the name Frieda Busch sounds familiar, it's because she was on here before talking about casual sex and how it's affecting our children. So I'm pleased once again to welcome to the Deeper Waters podcast today to talk about the medical effects of abortion on women, Dr. Frieda Busch. Dr. Busch, are you there?
I am here, Nick. Thank you for asking me to come.
Thank you for coming back. That's quite an impressive resume that you've got there. But what my audience might want to know is a little bit more about you aside from your resume. Tell us a little bit about the Frieda Busch story. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I can tell you this. I was born in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, to a father who was a Baptist minister and a mother who was a stay-at-home mom for a number of years, but eventually became a teacher. And they raised us that the most important things in our lives were that we would become God-fearing, law-abiding, and independent of them. And so all of our lives, there were 10 of us children, and I'm in the middle, and that's what we were raised to be. Significant work ethic, and I always wanted to be a nurse, and I became a nurse, as you know, said from the resume. But in nursing school, I became very involved with helping women have good childbirth experiences. So many of them were frightened, and it was because of a lack of knowledge, not knowing what happened to them, and I just felt very compassionate towards them. As a nurse, I could do some things, but was limited. So I taught at the School of Nursing for about a year and a half and decided to go to midwifery school so I could learn more to help women. And as you say, from the rest of my resume, as I learned how to do more, I wanted to help them even more, and that's how I got into medical school. My whole passion has been to help women make healthy decisions about their sexuality and enjoy their role as being a mother. I'm a wife of 44 years, mother of four, grandmother of nine, and great-grandmother of one. So as you can see, I practice what I teach and have really enjoyed doing that. More about me is that in this journey learning how to help women, I found that the whole family has to be involved in the situation. So I spent a number of years teaching about sexuality in general, reproductive health in specifically, but working with young people to learn about their bodies and also learn that they are whole people. It's not, sex is not just a physical act, but it involves you physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And so that's how I got into writing the book about Hook. I became aware of the Medical Institute for Sexual Health and gained a lot of information, medical information, to help me in my practice, because so many of the young women would come in and they would have different sexually transmitted diseases, or they would be pregnant or having relationship issues that affected their sexuality. And when I would explain things to them, they would go, but nobody told me, especially when it came to the STDs. They thought if I put on a condom, I'd be okay as far as avoiding the risk of sexually transmitted infections or pregnancy. And when I explain that condoms reduce your risk but don't eliminate your risk, and your behavior modification is the primary key to you achieving your goals, young ladies would really be negatively affected. So through the Medical Institute, gaining the information that I did from them, Dr. McElhaney, the founder of the Medical Institute, and I co-authored the book Hook, How Sex Affects the Whole Person, specifically how it affects you emotionally and how that affects hormonally your brain cells, and the fact that young people are not fully mature to make those critical decisions in their lives until they're in their mid-20s. And so that information we were able to publish and get out, and subsequently a second book called Girls Uncovered, talking specifically how young women are sexualized and the harm that comes to them as a result. And certainly our topic today, abortion, is one of those, if you would, words that people don't fully understand, and those that do seem to put a higher value on other things besides the life of the child that is a result of the sexual activity. So I know I've talked a lot, Nick, but and I could continue if you have any specific questions, but that's who I am, just a woman who has become an advocate for women so that they can get the best out of their lives and not sabotage or shoot themselves in the foot making decisions that could affect them long-term that keeps them from reaching their own goals. One other thing I would like to add, when I mentioned being married for 44 years, to the same man, by the way, he is my friend that I have walked this journey through life with, and it was actually his idea that I go to medical school, and he has supported me all along the way. So a lot of times women think, oh, your husband was so nice that he supported you in your decision. And I go, no, it was our decision. And when I went to medical school, he went to medical school. By the way, I had three children when I started, and we had a fourth child and a miscarriage while I was in medical school. So there is no way there would be a Dr. Freda Bush if there had not been a Mr. Lee Bush And I, in turn, have supported him in his business. He's CEO and manager of a waste, solid waste management company. And so we have, I say, journeyed through life together, helping each other become better than either of us would have been had we not joined forces.
I think there are many married couples who would say the exact same thing, as most listeners of this show know, I hope. I do this show straight from my home. And right here with my computer, I've got a picture of my wife right here when she was in high school, even, and it's by my desk. And you're talking about sharing the journey with someone, having them empower you to be what you couldn't be on your own, and how that works both ways. Allie and I celebrated 3.5 years yesterday. And
congratulations.
Yep, I see that. And when you talk about young women that have made mistakes in that way, I can look at this picture and think, gosh, it's a good thing we both were ones who waited and didn't make those kinds of mistakes.
So anything else you want to know about me?
I think that sums us up for now. But you, since we were talking about abortion, we can get into that. You said that a lot of people don't really know what they mean when they say abortion. So from a purely medical perspective, what are we talking about when we say abortion?
What we're talking about is the ending of a pregnancy before the age or the time of viability that the baby could live outside the womb. And that's traditionally the definition. So if pregnancy is 9 months or 40 weeks, if the pregnancy ends before the baby can live outside the womb independent of the mother, that is considered an abortion, whether it's a spontaneous abortion like a miscarriage, where the woman has not done anything to initiate the opening or emptying of the womb, or whether it's done electively or by, as we would say, termination, where there has been an act medically or physically to end the pregnancy. And that usually, the age of viability, would be about 24, 26 weeks. In roughly 6 months of pregnancy, or whether it is now legal to interrupt the pregnancy all the way up to the full 9 months. So we know that means that the baby could have lived either, you know, with assistance through a neonatology unit, or sometimes they are mature enough, stressed enough that they could live on their own. That legally can be done all the way up to the full 9 months of pregnancy. So an abortion would be the ending of a baby's life with the intent that it not live or survive outside of the womb. And according to the Supreme Court, that's all the way up to the full 9 months of pregnancy.
Yeah, I think we should have some more explanation also on viability, because, you know, even if a baby could live outside the womb, it definitely couldn't live outside the womb on its own. I mean, if an animal hatches, many times the animal can go straight out into the wild and be taken care of itself immediately, but a baby can't do that. And I do happen to know some people who were born premature and have survived. My mother was born premature, and the best man at my wedding was born premature. So what exactly do we mean by the baby's able to survive outside the womb?
Well, what we mean is that it would be able to breathe and move on its own, although it still would require food, clothes, and shelter the way adults require it. And whether that would be obtained in the neonatal intensive care unit, where there would be supplement, sometimes having to breathe for the child, it means that that child, given the proper support, food, nutrition, would be able to grow, thrive, and survive outside of the womb. So that is what we mean. Age of viability, again, I say, would be like 24 to 26 weeks, so it still would require support. Most babies at about 7 months, 28 to 30 weeks, can survive very well with just the regular support, but up until that point, they would require assistance. Most babies, if they're born at 5 months, you know, 20, 22 weeks, that would be very challenging, even with the assistance of the intensive care unit, neonatal unit, for that child, because its internal organs and systems are not mature enough for it to be handled. Although, as you say, there are some babies that have survived at 22, 24 weeks who have probably already undergone stress. The key thing for abortion to me is that you recognize it is a human being, it is a person. When that sperm from the male with its 23 chromosomes joins with the sperm, with the ova, or the egg, if you would, from the woman that also has 23 chromosomes, then you have a complement of 46 chromosomes that joins together. And that is the complement of chromosomes for a human being, 46 chromosomes. It is a unique union. Let me just take a little sidebar here. The 23 chromosomes that comes from the male and the 23 from the female is half of what they have, which is 46. But when they come together, you really don't know what 23 are inside from the male or from the female, which means that the union of those 23 to 46 is unique. There has never been that complement to come together ever, because, for example, I have 23 from my father, I have 23 from my mother. There are 10 of us. None of us are exactly alike. Yes, we're all human beings, but I don't have the same shape, nose, mouth. I don't have. Do you understand what I'm saying? This complement of chromosomes has never been before or will ever be again. Therefore, when the scriptures talk about, I knew you before you were formed in your mother's womb, or I knew your substance when yet it was not formed, that means that this is unique. It means that this person has never been before or will ever be again. That means that I am fearfully and wonderfully made, even though it was through the union of my mother's eggs and my father's sperm. But this 46 has never been before. Therefore, I am unique. I am valuable. I am not a blob of tissue. I am not unplanned, unwanted. When you look at it that way, to end that person's life before it can survive outside the womb, it's what we're calling an abortion, an interruption of a pregnancy that would have resulted in a full term or would have resulted in a unique individual had it not been interrupted.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. Go ahead.
I say that because, again, I hear stories of women. I have them in my office. I see them on television. I see them, you know, in other places who have had pregnancy terminations that they thought they were having before it was a baby. Just recently I had a woman at the Crisis Pregnancy Center, and that's what she said. She came there because she wanted to know if she could get an abortion before it became a baby. again, they don't understand. There's a lot of misunderstanding out there. When she was showed the sonogram with the baby's heart being present, with the baby moving inside of her womb, I mean, she was really surprised. And it made a difference in her decision as to whether to continue the pregnancy, though it was going to be challenging, whether to continue the pregnancy and parent the child or release it for adoption or have an abortion. Abortion had to be taken off the table when she saw that
Good.
It was a pregnancy that was a person unique from herself, and that if she continued it, it would result in a child being born, not a blob of flesh, not a anything other than a child.
Okay, we're at that point. We're going to take a quick break. We've had a good introduction going on so far. My guest is Dr. Frieda Busch. We're talking about the medical effects of abortion. We'll be back after this break.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
And we're back to the Deeper Waters podcast. My guest today is Dr. Frieda Busch talking about the medical effects of abortion on women. Now, your resume says you became a certified nurse midwife in 1970, which meant that you were helping to deliver children back then, and that was 3 years before Roe v. Wade became the law of the land. How different was it back then?
Well, back then there were a few states that did allow abortion. I was actually in New York City at the time, and I know that New York City was a destination for many women with unplanned or unwanted pregnancies, and they would come there and get their abortions and then go back to their respective states. And that really what was going on at that time before Roe v. Wade. How many there were, I don't know, but I know that we would see them having procedures done in abortion clinics and then would come with complications to the emergency rooms of the city hospital. I was working at Harlem Hospital at the time. And we actually, there were mid-trimester saline abortions that were being done at Harlem Hospital at that time. And I can tell you that is probably one of the most cruel procedures that could be done, in that the babies were alive, were moving about, they would inject salted water into the womb of the woman, which would literally scald the baby, and the baby would die. And then they would have to induce labor for the lady to labor and deliver the child. And many times the child would come when there wasn't a nurse or medical personnel available. And so the woman would be deliver this child unattended and would have to lay there until someone came for her. Now, usually there would be an attendant, but you can't predict when the kid's going to come. And so with abortion, it's the same way. So we would end up having to really provide a lot of emotional support for those ladies because they were not prepared for a child. Some of them, still having not died before they delivered, would come out and still be moving about. And I don't know if you can imagine psychologically, here you are in pain, already feeling emotional about ending the pregnancy, and then have to lay there and feel the kid wiggling between your legs while you're waiting for someone to come and attend you. It's that's how it was before Roe v. Wade.
Okay, well, that's how it was in New York City. Now, I was born in 1980, and so are several people who are taking part in the pro-life movement. So we've never known a world where abortion wasn't a commonplace reality. If you were looking not just at New York City, but say the whole of a country, the attitude towards abortion would be quite different back then, wouldn't it? That there wasn't as many sexual problems back then either, were there?
Well, I can't say that exactly, because I know there were women who really felt they were doing the right thing to not bring an unwanted child into life. There were also, and still are, medical doctors who at that time, were trying to prevent back alley abortions, as they say it, because, again, women would sometimes try to induce themselves in having an abortion, or they would go to clinics that were unregulated and would become complicated, come into the emergency room again with bleeding or with infection. And so the thought was they would prevent the risk or the complications of abortion being done illegally if they made them legal, safe, and rare. And that's the phrase I know that was used, the mantra that was used a lot. Unfortunately, well-meaning or well-intended people, physicians and women, were essentially duped, if you would, because what happened is, even now, 40-plus years later, there are still women who are coming into the emergency room having infections and having complications as a result of legal abortions. And there are women who died then before it was legal, and there are women who die now since it has become legal. So I would say the only thing you can say about that mantra, legal, safe, and rare, is that abortion is legal, because it's obviously not rare when you have 55 and counting million babies who have died as a result. That's not rare. And you can't say it's safe, because we have many, the maternal mortality from abortion is higher than we know, because we don't keep good records on abortion and maternal deaths. And we all know that it's 100% fatal for the baby. So before Roe v. Wade, the intent was to make abortion legal, safe, and rare. And we got it legal, but it's still not safe or rare.
You know, I'm finding it interesting to hear about the maternal mortality rate, because I've had major surgery before. I've got scoliosis. I had a steel rod put on my back a couple months before I turned 16. And shortly after I got married, I had minor surgery done. I had to have my gallbladder removed after having some gallstones strike one night. And when we have these kinds of operations, we're usually told by people things are going to go fine, the doctors know what they're doing, and we don't usually hear about cases of death happening from these. But why would the case be so different for abortion, when most of us just think, well, you know, you go in, you get that done, it's a medical procedure just like any other procedure. How can there be such great harm to the mother in that?
Well, there are a number of things that can happen to the mother. Number one, there is instrumentation of the womb that is really not prepared to open to allow the baby out until 9 months, say. And here you are at 6 weeks or at 12 weeks or at any point in between interrupting that pregnancy before the body is ready. And so injury actually mechanically to the womb itself is one of the biggest risk factors. And so that when you dilate the womb and open it before it's time, then you run the risk of injuring those cells and those muscles to the point that even after the baby comes, for future pregnancies, that muscle has been weakened, and she's at a greater risk for premature labor with the next pregnancy. But if you can just imagine, you're forcing a door open, and the fact that can be injured, it can be cut, would lead to excessive bleeding because there are major blood vessels down there that can be injured. You can also imagine that the womb itself where the baby is soft because it's made to expand from being not pregnant to being 9 months pregnant. And you've seen how a woman's body stretches. Well, those muscles have to get soft in order to expand like that. So now here you are forcing the womb open before it's time, and then you are going into a place where the muscles are soft. So the potential of you going through the wall of the uterus is definitely heightened. So it's possible not only to injure the cervical opening, the door, but to go through the walls of the uterus and injure the organs around it. So injury to the bowel, the bladder, the tube leading to the bladder can happen, including the major blood vessels. So that's where you run into women having to have hysterectomies, women having to have additional major surgeries, and the risk of infection is not only great from you potentially injuring the bowel and letting the fecal material out, but also the vagina is clean, but it's not sterile. And so you're potentially taking bacteria into a sterile place. You're taking it from the vagina into the womb. So infection, excessive bleeding, injury to those internal organs, and subsequent death happens as a result of termination or aborting a pregnancy before its time.
And isn't it also the case that, I mean, this might be implied in what you said, but I'd just like to make sure that a lot of women who have abortions can find it difficult to get pregnant and give birth in the future later on if they want to do that.
That is correct. Now, let me just tell you that the prematurity birth rate in the United States before 1970, before abortion was legal, was 6 per 1,000 live births. Now, in 2006, that preterm birth rate had doubled to 12.8. Now, these are not my statistics. This is the National Center for Health Statistics. And actually, the rate, because it had doubled, the National Institute, along with the March of Dimes, called a national conference in order to look into why this was happening. And they joined with the March of Dimes to decrease the number of premature births in the United States. And in their report, one of the things that they mentioned was that abortion was an immutable risk factor for preterm birth. And the reason that's important is two things. One, if a baby is born premature, it's more likely to die before it reaches its first birthday. And so you have an increase of infant mortality rate if the baby is born premature. So now if you consider the United States has an infant mortality rate that's high, and a significant contribution to that is premature birth, and an immutable risk for premature birth is abortion. Immutable means that once the pregnancy has started, there is no intervention to correct that increased risk. So abortion doubles your chances of having a baby born prematurely. And so it's just important for you to, for us to understand that trauma occurs to the womb that cannot be unchanged as a result of us interrupting it. And that is whether you have a medical abortion or whether you have a surgical abortion.
Yeah, you said this is from the National Organization of Health that's put this out with a March of Dimes. So we're not talking about a pro-life agency that put this out. I mean, this is a government looked into and such, and it's not some a bunch of Christians, for instance, looking together. This is officially backed, isn't it?
This is information that is published, as you say, by those organizations. And it is not Christian organizations or pro-life medical organizations. That is correct. Mm-hmm. And this information is available for anyone to verify, and they don't have to just take my word for it.
And I'm guessing the sad reality is this kind of information won't be talked about in a young girl's or young man's high school or sex education class.
And you know what? I can tell you that some of the risk avoidance or abstinence education classes do include information on fetal development, but I'm sure the comprehensive sex ed or risk reduction don't include that, because with that information, you can actually see the baby, you see the egg and the sperm come together, and then you watch the formation of the baby. You can actually see that by 6 weeks you've got a heart beating, and you then see the budding of the limbs, and you see the brains develop, and you can carry the development all the way up to 9 months. And there's no mistaking that that sperm and that egg, when they join together, forms the person that's born 9 months later. So we think we've started including more of that fetal development information because we feel like if people know this is a human being, not a blob of tissue, not a pre-baby, then that changes their perspective on having an abortion and saying that it's a woman's choice or it's her decision what she does with her body. Because you're saying, no, she gets the privilege of carrying another human being. She gets the privilege of nurturing that child before it's able to care for itself. It's not a blob of tissue. It's not anything other than another human being. It is a person who has the right to live just as you have the right to live.
Okay, well, we're going to take another quick break now around that time again. I got some more questions I'd like to ask Dr. Bush, and we'll be discussing those when we come back. I'm Nick Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We'll be back after this break.
It's here, the official Grok Radio mobile app. Listen to your favorite Grok Radio programs on your iPhone, iPad, iPod, Kindle Fire, Android smartphone, and tablet. The best thing is, it's absolutely free. Download it now from the iTunes or Google Play App Store, or get a link at our website, cyiworldwide.com. Grok Radio, Christian radio that doesn't suck.
And we're back, and if you want to call in and ask a question, our number is 714-242-5180. We have Dr. Frieda Bush talking about abortion. And Dr. Bush, when you were talking about this last time with the way that women are treated and such and what they're told and how they say, my body, my choice, I find it amazing when this kind of mantra comes up, because I think actually one of the most feminine things a woman can do is give birth, since that is just something totally unique to her. And it's like our modern feminist movement wants to deny that.
Well, I can agree with you wholeheartedly, because it is, like I said, it is not just her body. But when you look at women when they want to be pregnant, they are all happy and giddy, and they're telling the world, I'm pregnant. I mean, so if you're happy and pregnant and you want it, and you recognize that it's a child and you start wondering what it is and you start giving it a name, that same child, when it's not wanted, how is it different and now available or justified for the death sentence when it has not done anything but be? It was your behavior that resulted in that pregnancy. And it doesn't matter whether it was forced on you sexually. It doesn't matter if you forgot to take your pill or didn't do your condom or whether the guy was a jerk. None of that matters. What matters is the fact that you are pregnant. You get the privilege of caring and nurturing that other person until it's able to stand on its own. And whether it's wanted or unwanted, planned or unplanned, the reality is it is here. It is present. And pregnancy is not a disease. It is not forever. It's going to end. I mean, elephants carry babies 2 years, but human beings carry them at most 9 months. So there is an end to it, and you can go on with your life. You can go on and get your education. You can go on and get, you know, your career. There is nothing to hinder you from continuing your life in spite of the fact that you now get the privilege of carrying another child. Women can do something that's unique. Our bodies are made for that. Men get the privilege of planting that seed, if you would, inside of the woman. We can't do that. So each male and female have a role to play in this, and it is unique, the contribution that each of us makes. I'm from a family, like I said, there were 10 of us. I doubt if my mom and dad planned a one of us, but I can't say we weren't wanted or cared for, and I can tell you my mom was excited at the birth of each of us. I got the privilege of helping, you know, be a babysitter for my younger siblings, and it was a joy. Mama's pregnant. It wasn't, oh, Mama's pregnant. Because we knew that it was a person, and we would just welcome that person into our home.
My parents had a similar state, I think, when my mother was pregnant with me. I can look back at pictures of her holding up a little card, and it'll state what the date was on the card, so we can see how far along she was until I came around. And I look at those pictures and I think, that was really an incredible idea to do that.
Yes, and I believe that if more people understood, I think intellectually, especially when, you know, you're telling a woman to push, and the baby comes out, she knows it's not her body. And even the woman that has a late-term abortion, she knows it is not her body because she has felt the quickening and the rumbling inside, and she knows it's not her bowels. So something is, our society, I believe, is miseducating people when they carry those terms and continue those terms and putting blinders on.
You know, something else I think that we can mention along these lines also is that so many women want to stand up for their right to get an abortion because they don't want to be used at all. They want to have that freedom. And maybe from your experience, you can talk about how you've seen what's going on, because I speculate that in reality, abortion really helps women to be used more and more, because guys get the picture of, hey, if I get pregnant, I can just have an abortion. It's no risk to me, and I can go ahead and keep having all the fun that I want.
A significant number of the women report the reasons that they got abortions was coercion by their partners. And part of the reason is the partners didn't want the long-term connection to the woman. Perhaps their relationship was untimed or for a number of reasons. They didn't want to be connected to the woman. But neither did they want the child support and the responsibility for the child. And yet we're not clear enough to release the child for adoption. And so a significant percentage of women who have abortions is not by their choice, but by coercion from the father. And when you consider also the age difference, in the younger the woman is, the more likely it is that it's statutory rape. And so you have laws that are on the book in many states where they are to report the age of the father or the age of the female, and they are to get DNA samplings so that they can find and prosecute the men who may have impregnated younger girls, because we know that coercion is a significant part of it and not wanting to accept the responsibility.
And haven't there even been cases of people who were going to these groups and acting like they were women seeking an abortion, and they were told that if it was rape, they'd kind of be quiet about it, that there'd be a cover-up going on, in essence?
I have seen those undercover videos that have been done. I've seen some of them, and that is true, that not wanting to take responsibility for whatever reason, that the women are being forced, or the guys will pay for it if they don't take them themselves.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing I wanted to mention, I just want to backtrack a minute talking about prematurity. Many African-American women have premature babies, and that would be before 37 weeks of pregnancy. More often than other races, and many of them deliver before 32 weeks, which again is considered prematurity. And when researchers have done studies to see what is the difference between an African-American woman who delivers prematurely and other races, the findings are really not socioeconomic related. The differences, if you look for poverty, if you look for smoking, which we know contributes to small babies, they find that or alcohol use, they find that is not the difference in the prematurity rate, but that it's more to the fact that African-American women get more abortions than any other group in America. We are 12 to 13% of the population and get 37% of the abortions in the United States. And so that is significant. And if you look back at the history of Planned Parenthood with Margaret Sanger, there was a conscious effort to reduce the, quote, undesirables, unquote, in our population. And so the first abortion clinics were in Harlem. And in other African-American communities. And if you look even today, a significant number of the Planned Parenthood and abortion facilities are again in minority communities, making it convenient for them and putting, if you would, their right to independence, their right to choose above the baby's right to life, you know, promoting you'll decrease poverty or get an opportunity for an education and rise up if you don't have a lot of babies. And so I just wanted to point that out, that there are some specific targeting of certain communities as far as abortions in America. Another point I wanted to make.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, maybe this will tie into what you were thinking, but we've made a friendship with a couple from our church, and Ari did ask them a very pointed question, one that, being both disabled, we can't relate to, because their little baby has Down syndrome. And she asked, did the doctors at the hospital ever recommend abortion to you? And mother said, well, they did tell us there were other options when we found out our baby would have Down syndrome, but we made it very clear from the start that no, we are not going to do that. That is our baby. That is a child in the image of God, and we are not going to end this pregnancy. And that baby has, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of difficulties with raising a Down syndrome baby. There are a lot of financial and such difficulties, but the baby's been a great source of joy to them. And I think many parents of disabled children would say the exact same thing. So when you're about the talking about the undesirables, that just immediately came right out of my mind. But unfortunately, many women, when they find out their child has a disability of some sort, are more likely to abort.
And believe it or not, extreme prematurity is an increased risk for a woman who's had more than one abortion. And one of the risks associated with prematurity has to do with cerebral palsy, has to do with some other complications that can result as a of them being born premature, which would be a result of a woman having prior abortions. Actually, the more abortions a woman has, the more at risk she is for not carrying the baby to maturity, which means that if you've had if you've had one abortion, then your risk go up for having a baby before 28 weeks. If you've had two or more abortions, then your risk go up even higher for having the child born early. And again, now you've got prematurity coupled with cerebral palsy, coupled with learning disabilities, and the list goes on as a result. So now you may be in a position to have a child, but you're excited about having that baby, but you have increased your risk of having a child that would have those complications as a result of prematurity or extreme prematurity.
And Dr. Bush, in your practice, though, that, of course, there are times when disabilities happen, it's not because of abortion and such. In your practice, I'm sure you've delivered several babies who have these kinds of disabilities, and do you usually see that they end up being a great source of joy to the parents instead of the idea that it's usually for that they just be difficulty and nuisance and such?
Absolutely. It does provide challenges, like you were mentioning earlier, even with a child with Down syndrome. But it depends on your view of the value of life and a value of that child. And many of the women, they grow emotionally and spiritually during the process of carrying and raising a child that has disabilities. And through no fault of their own. I'm not saying, you know, abortion is the only reason that you would have a child that had disabilities. But just valuing the life of another person and learning and growing yourself as you're caring for this child is a plus for the individual as well as the family and the community. For sure, there are many women who have challenging pregnancies and have challenging children with disabilities or illnesses that find it very rewarding to have met the challenge.
Dr. Brisha, 3 weeks ago here in Knoxville, Johnny and friends did some work for their own a pageant called the Miss Shining Star pageant that my wife was in, and so naturally I was there the whole time, and it was all for girls with disabilities getting to be in a beauty pageant. And yes, I very proudly state my wife actually did win that pageant, so I can go around to her when I'm married to a beauty queen now. And I remember being on stage and watching all these girls come up, and some of them, their disabilities, they probably didn't know where they were. They didn't perform as their parents would want, especially if they were much, much younger. But I was just looking at everything. Each one of these children is someone their parents are delighting in. They're very happy. They want to show them off to the world. And there are so many people out here who would say, these women have no right to live whatsoever. It was just a thought that kept coming into my mind more and more, thinking about how the world treats what the Bible referred to as the least of these.
Yes, yes. Well, tell your wife congratulations, please.
I most certainly will, and I'm pretty sure I tell her congratulations most every day, but it's just we've got this huge cheapening in our life now, in our culture, as a result of abortion, that we often think that a baby in the womb has to be perfect. And if the life isn't perfect, well, we're not going to go with it.
Well, I can tell you, I'm trying to think if I've ever met a perfect person. And all we have to do is look in the mirror every day, and we'll know that we're not looking at one. And so if we have been allowed to live, I would think everyone has the right, and it's an inalienable right, which means that it doesn't come from us that we have the right to live. Just the fact that we are here, born, that's a right that was given not by us, but by God.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a quick break right now. We're nearing the halfway point of the show. There's another question I'd like to ask, some more topics I'd like to talk about, but we're going to be back to deal with those. I'm Nick Peters for Deeper Waters Podcast. Our guest is Dr. Freda Bush. We'll be back after this break.
Join Army Girl for Christ and Minister Grock as they tackle some of today's pressing issues from a Christian point of view on Truth Be Told, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, check out CYIWorldwide.com. Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grock Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
I am Nick Peters with Deeper Waters Podcast. Right now, our guest is Dr. Freda Bush, talking about the medical effects of abortion on women. But if you're here next week, and I sure hope you're going to be, we got a really good program lined up for you. My guest will be Dr. Mark Goodacre, and he's going to be talking about the Gospel of Thomas. And if you're wondering what's that, well, that's a good reason to tune in next week so you can hear about what it is and why it's dependent on the Synoptic Gospels. And I'm hoping we'll have enough time also to talk about his view on Q. It's a very unusual position he's got, definitely against the mainstream. And again, if you're wondering what's Q, well, tune in next week and you'll find out. But for now, we got Dr. Bush here. We're talking about abortion and its effects on women. Now, Dr. Bush, one claim I hear often, I'd like to get your take on, and like, know, is this true, is it false, or is it inconclusive at this point, is that if a woman has an abortion, she's more prone to get breast cancer. Is that true?
That is true. And what's interesting about that is the fact that you won't find that being told by the different cancer societies that are raising money for breast cancer. You won't find it on the website for the National Cancer Institute. I can tell you one thing in particular. There are peer-reviewed studies that have been published in the United States and in Europe that verify that this is a fact. And being politically correct is the only reason I can think of that that information is not more widely published. I'm actually sitting here at my computer trying to find a reference to it, to one of the latest articles that is out there on breast cancer and abortion. So until I can find it, let me just read. I mean, not, let me just share what I can. And that is an explanation of why that may be, until I can find some numbers. The thought process is that when the estrogen normally increases the size of the breast and prepares the tissue around the milk glands for pregnancy, when a woman gets her cycle each month, the level of hormone decreases, and so, you know, the swelling and tenderness that has come goes away. Well, when a woman gets pregnant, that preparation is enhanced by the progesterone, which is called the hormone of pregnancy. And so now the milk glands are being prepared, not just the support tissue around the milk glands, but the actual milk glands themselves. And so when you get further and further along in the pregnancy, those milk glands begin to develop and prepare for breastfeeding. But if the pregnancy is interrupted before the pregnancy has extended to provide for that maturation process, those milk glands and cells are suspended, if you would, in immaturity, which means that once the pregnancy has ended, if a cancer-causing agent comes along later on, those milk glands are what we call pluripotential. They can change into cancer cells rather than into milk glands and what they were intended to do. So that's why when a woman subsequently develops breast cancer, I won't say, I don't know the exact number, I'm sorry, of the percentages of women who get breast cancer as a result, but there are many studies that show that if a woman gets pregnant and the pregnancy ends in the first trimester, the first 3 months, she is at a greater risk of developing breast cancer in the future should she get exposed to a cancer-causing agent than a woman who has carried a baby full term. And if the woman who has carried the baby full term breastfeeds, she actually has a lower risk of breast cancer. So the women who have the least breast cancer are those who have carried their babies to term and who have actually breastfed. The women who have the higher risk of breast cancer is those who have never been pregnant or those who have had pregnancy terminations in the first trimester, the first 3 months. Now, that does not include women who have had miscarriages, and there is a different theory as to why the women who've had miscarriages are not at any greater risk for developing breast cancer than those who have carried to term. And the thought is that it's because the baby actually died, as opposed to and the hormones regressed as a result of that death, as opposed to the pregnancy being interrupted.
In other words, it's like the body knew what was happening and knew that the process it was designed for had been shut down of its own accord, but when an abortion takes place, it forcibly shuts things down. The body's not prepared for that, right?
That is correct. And I actually just found my link to the study on breast cancer. And one of the things that they're saying is that breast cancer is also in women who have had terminations is more aggressive than those that have ended naturally.
Now, I've also been told, and some of my friends at pro-life ministry tell me this, that the Komen Foundation, one of the leading foundations that stands against breast cancer, actually also supports Planned Parenthood. So it's kind of like they're undermining their own minds in doing this.
Well, if you'll recall, Komen Foundation, as I believe, had some controversy a few years ago when their new president stopped supporting Planned Parenthood. And I believe through the media and a number of pushback, they ended up supporting them again. Do you recall that? And I'm sure it was political. It wasn't because of anything as far as change in science. But I know that more black women are diagnosed with breast cancer and have a higher rate of death than white women, and that the difference is thought to be the abortion rate, but also the fact that we probably don't get mammograms as often and as timely as we should for it to be detected early. And we do know the earlier breast cancer is identified, the earlier it can be treated.
You know, earlier in the show, you talked about that there are dangerous complications to the womb and such because of abortion. Now we've covered breast cancer, which some people might have thought, geez, I wouldn't have considered that taking place and being the result of abortion. Are there any other medical conditions that we might not have thought of, but because someone gets an abortion, they're more likely to suffer from this sort of condition?
Well, one of the things is I mentioned briefly maternal mortality earlier, and there is a mantra that says abortion is safer than childbirth. But what we found is that the records are not kept properly by the health statistics are not kept properly on abortion nor on maternal death to the point that that mantra can be supported. Because of the lack of comprehensive data collection in relation to pregnancy and a woman's death, you cannot say that abortion is safer than childbirth. We keep very good records on childbirth, and we connect the pregnancy and the hospitalization and the delivery to the baby. But it's only 6 states that require definite reporting of abortions and maternal death, so that the pregnancy and childbirth deaths in the United States have not been tied together appropriately with vital statistics. And we do know that when Roe v. Wade was legalized, the rate of maternal mortality was about 6 deaths for every 100,000 pregnancies. In 2009, it was like 13. It had actually doubled. So if abortion is safer than childbirth, and if maternal mortality has doubled, then since abortion has been legalized, that really doesn't pan out. It doesn't make logistical sense.
There is one effect of abortion, I'm sure, on women. I'd really like to spend a whole lot of time talking about this one and hearing it personally from your practice, but there are a whole lot of psychiatric and psychological and emotional ramifications normally after an abortion for women, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. There is also multiple studies that show there is an increase in abortion and psychological effects. And the reason is that I believe deep down women do recognize that it is a child and that it has ended a life. And there's grief that has to occur anytime there is an ending of a life. And the woman has to acknowledge that. And so you have regret, shame, you have anxiety, depression, and actually significant studies have shown an increase in suicide, especially on the anniversary of the abortion. There are many women who can tell you every year when that child would have been born. There are women who get into alcohol and drug abuse as a result, and may even get into other self-destructive behaviors as a result because they feel they're unworthy. Now, you may say, well, she's pro-life, therefore she's finding all of these articles and these studies that support psychological effects. But I can tell you the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and other non-pro-life organizations have gotten together to form a website where women can come and express themselves or verbalize their feelings and their emotions about abortion. It's called For Exhale. And periodically I'll go to the website just to see what some of the women have written, and they can express words like shame and regret, emptiness, depression. They express those same terms that you find in the literature where documented studies have occurred and have shown the increase. But they don't call it psychiatric or psychological ramifications of the abortion. They just call it a woman's need to talk. They use different words to express the same thing. But European studies that have actually correlated the pregnancy with the termination with maternal complications in the future have been able to correlate the fact that there is an increased risk, as I've enumerated, as a result of a pregnancy termination over and above a woman who carried a baby to term. So there's a higher rate of emotional, mental, psychological disease in women who've had abortions as opposed to women who carried their babies to term. And that has been documented.
Well, couldn't someone say, well, that's because there are all these pro-life organizations out there that are guilting these women and shaming these women and making them feel terrible about what they've done. If we didn't have all these pro-lifers out there, where these women wouldn't have any trouble whatsoever.
Well, I find that hard to believe because in Europe, there aren't the magnitude of pro-life organizations there, and they have socialized medicines to the point, as I said, they can correlate the birth with the effect on the mother, and that's how we also know maternal mortality is higher than we reported in the United States associated with abortion, because they correlate their birth and death certificates better than we do. So I can't say it's because of the pro-life organization guilting them. I think women know they were pregnant. They know they have ended it at their own hands, even though they may have gotten medical assistance. And I think that is the issue.
I've even heard accounts of women who've said they've had such great guilt that they've gone out and gotten themselves pregnant again and had an abortion again just because they thought they deserved to be punished for what they did. And as you can tell, it just makes a problem all the worse for them.
I can tell you that. I'm looking here now at one meta-analysis of 22 published studies that were done that showed 36 effects as a result of women terminating. And so it's important to understand that if you're 81 times more likely to have psychological effects as a result of a pregnancy termination. There's an 81% increased risk of mental health problems of ladies who've had terminations than ladies who have carried their babies to term. So we're talking about depression, alcohol abuse, drug use, and suicide was 155% higher. So again, these are not my studies. These are studies that are published in peer-reviewed journals. So you can blame it on us, but I tell you what you can blame on the pro-life community is providing post-abortion counseling, providing a safe place where a woman can come and express herself, where she can cry and grieve, and they have Bible studies that a woman can go through. One in particular I'm thinking of is called Heal My Hurt, where they actually take them through the process of naming the baby, embracing the baby, so they can give it a proper conclusion, if you would, that allows the woman to then be able to heal. Many, I'm thinking of the organization Silent No More, allows women an opportunity to admit they've had an abortion and to resolve it. Unlike another organization I've recently seen has been passing out T-shirts saying, I had an abortion, but not giving the women an opportunity to grieve, but to champion or shout so they, you know, can say, it's okay, I had one. It's okay if you have one too. There's a difference in shaming and blaming and providing an opportunity for the woman to resolve the fact that there was a life, there has been a death, and I'm going to grieve for it, even if I was the reason. I think it's very important for women to accept responsibility, to repent, and then to acknowledge it and truly move on in their lives instead of being stuck at that place where they made that decision, but now making an about face or acknowledging, I'm sorry I made that decision. I will not only make a different decision, I'll heal from this and help other women that they don't make that same mistake. I think it's a regeneration or refreshing.
We're going to take a quick break right now. I'm Nick Peters with Deeper Waters Podcast. Our guest is Dr. Frieda Busch. We'll be back after this break.
Hey, this is Minister Grock. Thanks for listening. Although Grock Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at cyiworldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
And we're back, and I'd like to remind everyone that, yes, we are supported by your donations. Please do support us financially. We really need your help to keep doing what we're doing here. This show that I do, it's free. My guests come on for free. I don't pay them anything. They don't pay me anything. Everything here is done free. But if you do want to support Deeper Waters, then you just need to go to deeperwaters.wordpress.com. You can find a donate button there, or you can donate to us through Risen Jesus or the Ratio Christi Issues and Answers chapter. And guys, I'm going to give you a great way you can also support us, okay? Valentine's Day is coming up. And I'm not sure how many of you know this, but one thing women really seem to like to get is jewelry. And one of the friends of Deeper Waters has decided that she wants to help us out. And if you go to Lena Clester, that's LaynaClester dot MyPremierDesigns, MyPremierDesigns dot com, and enter in the passcode LOVE to go shopping. You can buy your special lady in life a great gift for Valentine's Day. And Premier is a Christian company. And when you do that, Lena says 25% of every purchase will go to Deeper Waters. And if you want that information again, you can just send me an email, apologianick@gmail.com. My email address is on my blog. I'll send it to you. But this is a great way you can support Deeper Waters and show your lady how much she means to you this Valentine's Day. Now, getting back to Dr. Busch here, can you tell us some cases maybe from your personal practice where women have come in and had an abortion and you've had to deal with the ramifications they're going through psychologically and mentally and spiritually?
I certainly can. One lady comes to mind immediately who she was trying to get pregnant. She was in her mid-30s and working with her reproductive endocrinologist came to the conclusion that she was infertile and was not able to have a child. In the course of taking her history, the abortion that she had had when she was younger and in college had not really come out. And so when she realized that pregnancy that she had ended those many years ago was going to be the only pregnancy she would successfully have, that lady literally had a meltdown in my office. Now, I don't know all the circumstances as to why she had the abortion as a younger woman, but I do know it had to do with achieving her education, not wanting to embarrass her family. But I know that fast forward, she's now married, wants to have a child, and realize that she cannot. That was a significant emotional revelation for her and, of course, required counseling. I'm thinking of another young woman who had had 7 abortions, and I'm not sure, again, all of the reasons why she chose that, it seems, as a form of birth control. But I do know she wanted to be complete her education before she got into a meaningful or significant relationship. And now she has completed college. She's gotten a master's. She has got her Ph.D. And she, quote-unquote, feels empty. Now she is unable to really have a significant relationship, and because of the, if you would, lifestyle, but also because of the fact that she has ended so many pregnancies, it has changed her emotions. And again, we're making referral, or have made referral, for counseling on a long-term basis. It is her desire now to change, and but she has that history that she has to go through and receive professional help in that area. I'm sure as she was having the relationship, as she was choosing that as a birth control, she was not considering fast forward down the road how it was going to affect her. And again, if you've got society telling you it's okay, it's not a baby, or it's okay, it's your body, you can choose, you'll have a different response and a different behavior than if you recognize it is not your body, you get the privilege of carrying that body, and it is a child that has a right to live. It does make a difference in what you do.
The last time you were on the show, you talked about the hookup culture and how casual sex is destroying our children. What role does abortion play in all of that?
Well, if you are not aware that it is a child, it becomes less important to you. If you think doing Depo-Provera or even taking the morning after pill will keep you from getting pregnant and the condoms will keep you safe, then you're less likely to use self-control or delay of immediate gratification as skills that you can help build healthy relationships. And so it actually promotes a less strenuous or more casual effect as far as your behavior. It's my understanding that if you utilize the skills that would help you establish healthier relationships, friendships, not allowing sexual activity to be paramount in building those relationships, that you're more likely to have a healthy relationship and more likely to have a long-term relationship that would be open and welcoming to pregnancy and to children.
Because part of the damage in our culture is too often we see in the media and such, and you know, entertainment, sex happening regularly, but there's never any physical consequences. I mean, you might find relationships breaking up and such, but you're not going to find someone getting pregnant. You're not going to find someone getting an STD. It's all just fun and games.
Well, last week I had a young woman who came in for a pregnancy test, and she had taken 2 morning after pills the week before because she had sexual activity and had used one and her cycle hadn't come, so she used another. And so you find a lot of improper use of these materials. If you read the directions, you're not supposed to take the morning after pill more than once in a month. And they're not correlating it with your cycle, which we know the morning after pill to be effective should be taken before ovulation. To take it after ovulation is really not effective. It wasn't designed to be that way. And so you have young ladies who are doing the casual sex, wanting to, if you would, have the recreation from the sexual activity, but not recognizing or disconnecting the behavior from the consequences. And therefore, they're running the risk of setting their cycles off balance. As a matter of fact, the lady wasn't pregnant, but she had thrown her cycle off by taking multiple morning after pills, trying to make sure she wasn't pregnant. And as I mentioned to you earlier, the more abortions you have, the more likely you are to interrupt your ability of achieving or carrying a pregnancy long term. And one other thing we've not mentioned that I think has a lot to do with the behavior and not limiting your partners and not and getting involved in casual sex is the use of the medical abortion, the RU486, or the pill that they take early in pregnancy. And what we're finding is that if they are not taking it at the proper time, it's not effective, or they end up having excessive bleeding, and there have been deaths that have been associated with taking the morning after pill, taking the medical abortion, the RU486, and significant infections as a result. So these young ladies are seeing an, quote, easy way out, but they're not understanding the potential complications that they're exposing themselves to medically, physically, and emotionally. And a lot more education needs to go into them getting the information, I think, in order for them to make a healthier decision.
How exactly is it that RU486 is supposed to work, and what are the dangers involved with it?
Well, I can tell you that the the RU486 is supposed to be given before 42 weeks of pregnancy, and she is to get the pill while she's in the clinic and then to repeat it once she is home and given another tablet that would cause the uterus to contract and evacuate the uterus. What then happens over the next 24 to 48 hours is that she goes into labor literally at home. And believe it or not, it is very traumatic for the young woman to have that significant amount of bleeding and hemorrhaging and passage of clots at home by herself. Now, one of the advantages or enticements for the young lady to take the tablet is she is taking the medical pill before she's really showing, before anybody would know that she's pregnant. But they don't really tell her about the cramping and the bleeding that she's going to have at home by herself. Sometimes a young man will be with her. Sometimes someone else would be with her. But a lot of times those young ladies are in the house by themselves. So this medication is given that's going to interfere with the growth and the continued development of the baby. Once the baby supposedly has died, then she's given a second drug that will cause her uterus to contract and expel it. And this actually takes course over several days. It's not like the surgical abortion. You go in, you have a procedure done, and you go home, and you will have some bleeding for a few days. But this actually is going to cause you to have significant cramping, like labor pains, if you would. Many of them have diarrhea, chills and fever, and heavy bleeding. And as I said, there have been deaths as a result of a infection that can come and cause sepsis over the body. So there is a website where a father started the website as a result of his 18-year-old daughter having a medical abortion and dying. And there have been thousands of adverse complications that have occurred where people have registered them. And so the what we call the Bayer's report that the FDA provides has a website where you can actually go and see how many complications have occurred or have been reported. Now, the only problem with the VAERS, V-A-E-R-S site is that it's voluntary. And so you would have to, it's not probably as accurate as it should be because it's dependent upon people volunteering to come and register that they had a complication. But there have been a number of complications that have occurred as a result of the medical abortion. And one of the reasons is because those who are giving it are not following the strict FDA guidelines as to the fact that only doctors are supposed to give it. They should have an ultrasound before it's done to document the pregnancy, that it's in the uterus, not in the tube. And there have been ladies who've had the pregnancy in the tube, and the tube has ruptured, and there have been some deaths as a result of it. But they should have a sonogram verifying the location of the pregnancy. And then once the pregnancy is expelled, then she is to go back for a medical follow-up. And like I said, the website that I mentioned earlier that was put up by this father is called abortionpillrisk.org. Abortionpillrisk.org. And there have been, like I said, at least over 2,000 adverse events, over 600 hospitalizations from complications as a result, and a number of deaths as a result. And again, people think, oh, I just take this pill, I'll go home in the privacy of my home, I'll expel it, and nobody will be the wiser. Well, I've had ladies come in here, young girls in particular, who said nobody told me how painful it would be. And water, I mean blood coming out like water, and very frightening.
I really can't even begin to imagine how bad it is. It's so scary to hear that this is going on around us. Right now, we're going to have to take another break, come back. We're going to wrap things up, and it's been pretty negative here. I'm going to try and end things on a positive note here for our listeners here. I'm Nick Peters with Deeper Waters Podcast. My guest is Dr. Frieda Busch. We'll be back after this break.
Oh, yeah. Hey, folks, it's Will ZPI. And you guys got to check out CYIWorldwide.com, home of the Grok Show. Free MP3s, music, advice, and even prayer support. That again is CYIWorldwide.com. Check it out.
And we're back. My guest is Dr. Frieda Busch. I'm Nick Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We're talking about the medical effects of abortion. Now, Dr. Busch, we spent the show talking about effects from death, depression, sickness, inability to have children, etc. Let's suppose there's some woman out there who's listening to this, and she's had an abortion, and right now she's really struggling with what she's hearing and really saddened by it. What hope can we give women who have had abortions?
Well, the first thing I would say is they can get a resource from the Center for Pregnancy Choice or Crisis Pregnancy Centers. And these are ladies who have been trained to counsel women who are considering abortion or who have had abortions. And many of these Centers for Pregnancy Choices have Bible studies or have resources to help a woman go through the process of healing from the abortion. So that would be the first thing I'd say. Number two, there are many professional trained counselors and pastors or religious counselors who would have been trained also in helping women to recover from anxiety and depression. And perhaps as a result of having had abortion. But I think probably the first thing to do is just to acknowledge. I think the Justice Foundation is another organization that you could get help from healing from the abortion. Acknowledging the fact that you made a decision and now here it is weeks or months or years later that you recognize that you made a mistake, then I would say, as the scriptures say, if you confess your sin, he is faithful and just to forgive you and to cleanse you. So you now can even look back and remember that you made that decision, but it doesn't cause the pain and the sting that it used to. You can remember it because it's like if you had had any other surgery and a scar resulted. You can always look back at that scar and see that did happen, but that scar doesn't cause the pain and the emotional angst that it did initially. So there is hope for women to make an about face and to acknowledge and to forgive and to cleanse themselves. One other patient that I thought of as I was saying this is a 30-year-old woman who had had an abortion 20 years. She's 36, I'm sorry, and she'd had an abortion about 20 years earlier. And she kept saying, they told me it wouldn't affect me. They lied to me. And she was having nightmares and flashbacks and having periods of crying when she would see other children. Well, she needed more than just a pat on the hand and saying it was okay. She needed to go to counseling, and actually she went through one of the Bible studies that I'm talking about through the Crisis Pregnancy Centers and was able to get resolution, if you would, and to even go on to help other women. And when women can help other women in that respect, then they are able to restore and heal and feel good about themselves and to take that negative and make it a positive, if you would. And that, again, is a very good thing that can happen as a result.
Another ministry I've heard about that helps with that, and I think it helped a woman I No, we went for the same thing, is Rachel's Vineyard. Are you familiar with that one?
I am. Thank you very much. That is an excellent ministry. And again, it's sort of similar to what I was saying about healing my hurts, where they actually take them through the process of not just acknowledgement, but to actually personalize that baby, giving it a name, writing a letter to it, and other ways to help you release, if you would, so that you can go on. And it's, again, a scar is still there, but it doesn't cause the pain and the angst that it would. I've had many women who go on to actually help in crisis pregnancy centers or to use that information in counseling friends and others, co-workers or neighbors or members in their church, to teach them to respect and protect their bodies so that they then can help other women not make that same decision, that they become counsel and support around them as they are going through the pregnancy, whether they keep it, whether they release it for adoption. It doesn't matter, but you've got somebody who is walking alongside you. Another thing these crisis pregnancy centers do is provide resources to the women, whether it's clothing, whether it's housing, or getting them in touch with medical resources so that they can have care for themselves during their pregnancy time.
What about the person who might be this missing woman and she's thinking that, you know, God's just really angry with me, I'm sure. God's punishing me for what I've done. There can never be any grace for me.
Again, I say, if you acknowledge your culpability in the situation and you are really remorseful and regret and willing to accept that, then the scripture says God is faithful. He will provide a way of escape. He will forgive and he will cleanse. I'm so glad that he does know that we are humans and that we do fall down and that he is there to help us get up. And he's not there with a big stick to zap us, but he walks with us through the valley, if you would, and he helps us as we go along. He is faithful, even when we are not. You've probably seen the story of the poem about footprints, where the man sees footprints in the sand, and he sees two sets of prints initially, and as he goes on his journey, there's only one set of footprints, and he's wondering, where is God during this time that I'm only seeing one set of footprints, assuming that they're his? And then he hears the voice that says, my son, that was during the time when I was carrying you. So God's love is unconditional. You don't have to be so good that he won't love you or think that you can be so bad that he'll stop loving you. His love is unconditional. And one of the things that I have found in working with women is information is important. But acknowledging that you are a three-part being is also important. Yes, I'm going to give you information to help you make healthier decisions. But I want you to also understand that you're not just a body, and it didn't just happen to your body, but it happened to all of you, your mind, your body, and your spirit. And you can make decisions that helps protect all of those. It is a child. And if you have made a decision in the past to have an abortion, that should not color the rest of your life, that you can make a different decision and you can go forward through life healing and helping others. You learn from your mistake and you try to help others. That's why I think sometimes I get so disappointed, maybe even angry, when I see women being lied to about this is nothing but a choice, or that it's something that can be erased. You can never forget you were pregnant. A woman knows that she is. Pregnancy is not a disease. It is a child. And to avoid those mental health issues, we need to stop lying to women and stop devaluing life. We need to let them know that they can make a different decision. And even if they use morning after pill, or even if they use condoms or contraception, thinking that that will prevent it, and if they get pregnant, they say, I can't. They need to recognize, I have another decision now, because it's not just one me, but it's two people that I'm concerned about. Abortion not only hurts or kills the unborn child, it also affects a woman mentally, emotionally, and physically. We've talked about the potential problems that can happen, you know, infection, bleeding, injury to bowels and bladder, injury to the woman, even death. But that can all be avoided if we tell women the truth. And I do believe walk with them and beside them. As a gynecologist, I can acknowledge that it's a privilege to take care of women. And I think we need to be more caring and concerned with those women that are in crises or in pain, and let them know, I will walk with you. And I know gynecologists, and I know people who have taken women into their homes and helped them through that time of abortion, and or through that time of pregnancy, to help them if they've made a decision not to have an abortion. There is hope. And as I told you at the top of the show, Nick, abortion was legalized to help women, supposedly, and by saying that it was to make it legal, safe, and rare. And that's not been the truth. We know after 40-plus years that is not the truth, and that we need to protect women's health. We need to protect the babies, and we need to help our society acknowledge the value of each life. Abortion is a poor solution to an undesired pregnancy. We should be embracing every person and acknowledging the value of their life.
Okay, we've got about 6.5 minutes left, so let me ask you something real quick. We've been talking about the effects on women. How about, is there anything out there for men who might have helped or encouraged women to get pregnancy who also have guilt later on? Is there anything that can be done to help men with that?
That's an excellent question, because a woman does not get pregnant alone. And there are other organizations that help women, but at a lot of the crisis pregnancy centers, they do have counseling, and they have the same type of help for men as the Rachel's Vineyard and as the Heal My Hurts for men as they do for women, because a woman does not get pregnant alone. And yes, there are There is an organization called Protecting Black Life that has a ministry for men who have been involved in abortion. And I'm sure you could find that on the, if you Googled it, Protecting Black Life. There's another organization of African Americans called Issues for Life, and again, providing resources for women and men, and also for health professionals. So if there are any health professionals here, an organization called the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs does accept membership from others other than OBGYN, family practice physicians. We have a number of medical students that are part of the organization to be provided with medically accurate information. And these resources are available to registered nurses and to other health professionals as well. There's a lot of good resources out there that can give you information to help you understand. We've talked about prematurity. We've talked about maternal mortality on this show today. We've talked about breast cancer. We've talked about hemorrhaging in infections. All of this medically accurate information can be provided or obtained through many of these sources so that people can understand that it's not necessary for us to continue in making these decisions, regardless of what the politicians may say, regardless of them saying it's your choice. You know it's your body, but a woman has the privilege of carrying another body. And men, we couldn't do it without you. So if you have made a decision to pay for an abortion or to accompany somebody to an abortion clinic, there is healing and help for you as well.
Well, and I'm sure you've also got some resources up at your website, strategicculturalinitiative.com, right?
Yes, and the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, AAPLOG, is an excellent resource, as well as resources through the Christian Medical and Dental Association, resources through the CareNet, which provides information and support to crisis pregnancy centers, as well as Heartbeat International.
Well, we've only got a couple minutes left, but I'd like to remind everyone that next week, Dr. Mark Goodacre is going to be my guest. I'm up for the Synoptic Gospels and the Relation of the Gospel of Thomas. So I hope you'll be here for that. But with a little over 2 minutes left, Dr. Bush, is there any final message you'd like to give to my audience?
Well, like you said, I'd like to leave on hope, but I do want people to understand that abortion destroys life, not just the life of the child, but also the life of the mother. Even if she doesn't end in death, it increases her risk for emotional complications as well as spiritual complications. We need to be more active politically to provide regulations in the 50 states. Some states have more restrictions than others. In Mississippi, one of the things we've been trying to do is just simply get the abortion clinics to have the same regulations as any outpatient surgical unit, requiring the doctors to be board certified, as well as requiring the clinics to get licensed through the health department and to be inspected on a regular basis. I think if you're going to have a surgical procedure in an outpatient unit, an abortion certainly is a surgical procedure, they should undergo the same rules and regulations as any other outpatient clinic. I can't imagine going to get orthopedic procedure without the medical clinic being regulated, but yet here you are going to be inside of a woman's body and the clinics aren't being regulated and the doctors may not be either. So that is one of the things I would incite people to become more medically, more politically involved in providing help and hope for women.
10 seconds. Okay. Well, Dr. Bush, thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Nick. This has been a great opportunity to let people know about the safety that there is in continuing a pregnancy. Having a child is a lot healthier for both mom and child than having an abortion.
And we'll be back next week with the Deep Waters Podcast and Dr. Mark Goodacre. And I'm Nick Peters, signing off.